All right, good evening, and welcome to part two of Key Life Transits. Let's see, I'm going to leave the mic open for now. So if there's a lot of background noise coming from anyone, actually, you know what, to have you be a little more free to, like, eat or watch... What, you know, watch Christopher Hayes or something. I will. I'll go into quote unquote lecture mode. So, oh, people are showing up still. So pound on star two if you. Okay, people are coming here. I may have to start over again. All right, Max is on. Goldman C in West LA fadeaway. Carolyn, there you go. C A R O L Y N. All right, we've got Edie in the room. Edie, did you get your chart key reading? Okay, that remains a mystery.
Yes, thank you.
Pardon?
The chart key readings is amazing. I'm just trying to study it, and I'm going to email you back on it. But fabulous.
Oh,
thank
good.
You.
Okay.
So many insights from that.
Excellent. Good. I'm finding this is an interesting format to work basically without the client, since I've spent 25 years listening to my clients and getting paid to listen for hours and hours and hours. It's taught us all a lot, but this is why I can distill so much into 10 minutes.
So yeah.
I'm really
well,
glad.
Certainly in those 10 minutes and the comments that you made, I could go through pretty much each one of them and say, yes, dot point, this is exactly what happened at this time. This is how it played out in my life. Mm-hmm. So pretty interesting.
All right.
And some good insights from it as well.
Excellent. Good. So
thank you.
This is the thing about the listening part and why I suggest that is potentially, I don't know everyone's proficiency level here. I recognize a few people as being, you know, solid intermediate students. Meaning that, you know, if I say Aries, you can give me some concepts and you can tell me that Mars rules Aries, and probably a lot more. But when you listen, you get a sense of the diversity of expressions of chart placements and transits, right? So there's no one expression. These things exist in a very wide range of possibilities, and part of what you have to do is to navigate that wide range of possibilities. But what I have found, I mean, the way that I came upon this is back in the summer of, like, 95, I was hanging out with Dave Wilcock in my little apartment in Rosendale before he was the Dave Wilcock. He was just this dude that I would drum with down in this mine, and we would hang out. In those days, he was extremely funny. And by the way, I think he's got some of his sense of humor back. I saw him on one of those shows, on one of those channels a couple of nights ago. Anyway, so we're sitting there, and I had a recording of what I think was my first reading. And I played him the first, like, 10 minutes of it, where I'm like, saying something, and the client's like, no. Like, say something else, and the client says, no. Say something else, and the client says, no. Maybe she was being a refusenik. But at that moment, we looked at each other and said, basically, there's got to be a better way to do this. And right in that moment, I inverted the method of astrology into a listening approach. And a little bit later that summer, I had a homeopathic consultation with the local homeopath named Katie Bray. And I sat there listening to her question me in this way that is peculiar to the homeopathic intake interview. I'm not sure if anyone's ever had that. I suspect someone or two people in the room have, where you're asked things about your ailment and you're asked things about just generally how you feel and you know, or do you feel more constipated laying on the left side or the right side? And right, the homeopaths like to be observant. Whatever's in those little bottles, you sit there and you describe your situation, and that's your contribution to the work, is that you must be observant and describe what is going on for you, and they're paying attention. Many of them now work with professional note takers. So I had an example from that, and I knew that Chiron transits were relevant, and then I, from that moment forward, began with a kind of an intake interview with every client, where I checked a diversity of transits. I've switched into lecture mode, by the way, to cut out the background noise, so now you can chew or turn up the television. So so this began basically a research process that's lasted till the current day, because with every client I work with, even if it's someone who, you know, just, there may be like rare exceptions if I don't see the chart, for example, but the minute I've got the chart open and I see a bunch of planets in the chart somewhere, I can pretty much tell you when Chiron came by, and I'll just randomly say, so what was up in 2001? Like, what were you doing? And they'll tell me something, and suddenly the chart just makes perfect sense. And this is what I suggest that you do. It's to get a sense of who you're working with. I understand that there's a lot of pressure on astrologers that started to go away in the 1970s when people like Dane Rudyard were telling us that we should have lunch with our client before doing their chart so we could find out a little bit about them. How about that? Like one of the inventors of humanistic astrology said, well, this is about people, not about charts. And so I would propose that your goal as an astrologer is to keep the process as much about people as possible and as little about charts as possible, and to use the chart on a kind of a homeopathic basis, where you deliver based on the chart and then the amount of time you spent listening to the person, which I suggest you take as long as you want. If it takes you 55 minutes of a one-hour session to hear somebody out, but try to book them for a couple of sessions. But if it takes 55 minutes of a one-hour session, and in the last 5 minutes you give them your message and it's the right message because you understand what's going on and how they relate to their the experience of their astrology, right? Because they're having an experience of their astrology. It's not just dots on the page. They're actually living this out in lived reality in some way, and you've got to figure out what that way is, what that means, what that's all about. And then you've got something. Then you have credibility with the client. And this method was coming into style in the 70s, something more like it, more client-centered, it used to be called. And then basically what happened was Project Hindsight started to take hold, and I think that the work of Project Hindsight has largely been misused by the astrology community, because the astrology community in many ways, especially the younger astrologers, is really being heavy-handed, in my opinion, in terms of attempting to tell the client their fate. And if I were listening to a 100-year-old astrologer next to the Ganges in Mumbai, I hope it goes through Mumbai, I might pay attention. But if I'm listening to some 30-year-old upstart read the chart and tell someone their fate, that's ridiculous. It's irresponsible and shouldn't happen. And I'm concerned that this reading has taken hold in some way where people think that there are formulas that you can follow and that you can look at the chart and do some number crunching and calculate their time lords or whatever the hell it is and tell them what's going to happen. And so after a kind of a respite and a gradual understanding that we need to be in the real world and not in the fantasy of the chart. And this was taking hold around the time of the discovery of Chiron, by the way, in the 70s, when people like Fritz Perls still had respect when, though, you know, the discovery of lithium began to kill therapy, and that was quite a while ago. Tom Wolfe has a great piece on that, by the way, about the discovery of lithium and what happened to psychotherapy. I don't remember the piece, but I should be able to retrace where it is. An ethos opened up, which I have covered in a piece called The Folk Art of Therapy, where your therapist or counselor, consultant, whatever, is not the person with all authority and knowledge whose face you can't see because you're laying in a couch facing the other way, who then proceeds to analyze you and tell you their analysis. In the folk art of therapy, which is what we're practicing, there can be a discussion. There can be an understanding reached. And many of the same rules of hygiene apply, and the therapist or astrologer doesn't have to, believe everything that they hear, but you hear it, though. That's the thing, is you hear it and you let it inform you about the person. And in astrology, one of the ways to do that is a kind of a calm, low-key inquiry into the events of certain transits. And there's two main categories of transits. One's that I call key life transits that happen to similar cohorts at similar times. So, you know, all people around 6, 7, or 8 will have a certain Chiron transit at around 14, 15 years old. And all people in our era around 43 have their Uranian opposition. And all people at age 29 have their Saturn return. And all people at age 50 have their Chiron return. These are what I'm calling key life transits, the ones that are cohortal, if that's such a word, that apply to the whole cohort and then can therefore relate to developmental stages. Now, the danger of developmental stages is you don't want to have too many fixed ideas about developmental stages. But there is a way to speak to someone when they're 21, and there's a way to speak to someone when they're about to enter their Saturn return, and there's a way to speak to someone when they're coming out of their Saturn return. There are certain basic expectations that it's fair to experiment with. Like at age 30-ish, you're looking for the conscious desire to be more mature, to take on adult responsibilities. And as I think Stephen Forrest said brilliantly, the sign that you have graduated from your Saturn return is that you like going to work. I mean, that's just, talk about summing it up in one sentence. And that's the kind of thing that you're listening for. And each of these key life transits, each of these planets involved in key life transits, and I've sent around a list, emails I sent around a list, I consider the planets involved to be Saturn, Chiron, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. Saturn, these are basically the slow movers out, and it's really all we need because we've got a diversity of a traditional planet, the three modern planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. That, by the way, is a term of art. The modern planets specifically means Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, though in that group I count Chiron and Eris as modern planets. And then Chiron. And like being a multi-instrumentalist, you learn how to play each of these instruments through experience and through practice. And part of how you gain your understanding is through reading. You want to read diverse sources and not take them too seriously, because there's a lot of bad stuff in books that has, by the way, become a real problem for me in my process of teaching astrology, because I really struggle to have dependable books to give people that don't end up mind-fucking somebody about something. For example, if you've probably all got your PDF of Astrology Revealed, look up the Venus Square Mars bit, where I went digging through a whole bunch of books, and I wanted to find one that I knew was going to be difficult for old astrologers to come up with a positive interpretation of. Not knowing what would be in them, not really remembering, I just picked Venus Square Mars, knowing they'd have a tough time with that one. And by the end of the day, writing that bit, I was basically horrified and regretted ever having recommended any astrology book to anyone ever in my entire career. So my list of books I can recommend is really short, but they tend to be by Melanie Reinhart, if you want to boil it down to one person. And there's a couple of others, but you have to watch for the stinker statements. Melanie basically never makes them, by the way, because she's hip to this thing where you really have to be with not the chart, but with the client. You've got to figure out where this human being in the room is coming from, which means that, in my opinion, you must be able to work without the chart or any cards or divination tool at all. When you can do that, you can work with the chart. So it is therefore good to practice on both ends of therapy environments, and not using the chart. And one of the ways you do the work by not using the chart is, but having some literacy in astrology, is that you know what the early 40s are about. You know what 29 is about. You know what 50-51 is about. But without projecting too much, this is the key thing, is to use astrology very gently to work with the person as a kind of a probe. You just want to tap gently on the chart. More like network chiropractic than like popping and crackling chiropractic. There's a couple of different approaches to chiropractic. More like shiatsu than acupuncture, where you just gently work the point. And the points that we're working with is the dynamic where the chart meets the actual planets that are orbiting in the sky. And I don't know really anyone else teaching this method, but this is where the chart is activated. This is where the chart engages. This is where we get a feeling for how this thing that's basically static, right? The chart is a picture of a moving thing. It's a snapshot. It's kind of the relationship between a fractal and a chaos pattern. The chaos pattern's moving. The fractal is not moving. The fractal is a pause in the chaos pattern. Well, if we turn the energy on, assuming we just stay with the fractal, the chaos pattern continues to move in the progressions and the transits. Progressions is a whole other topic, and it's a very exciting one. But sticking to transits, the transits are what activates the chart. The transits are the engagement and energization of the contact point, the engagement, the real life events and explorations and incidents of the chart. And in my experience, they're the thing that tells you how the person relates to their astrology, what the underlying material might be, at least in some dimensions and some angles of the chart, and what might happen when you turn up the juice on the chart. Because the chart is kind of sitting there like a cold, chilly thing in one sense of looking at it. And when the friction comes, when the transits happen, there are developments. And from listening to people, and you can't do this enough. And when you start taking money, take money for listening. Take payment for a full session for listening. And if anybody complains, you say, I'm doing this in a contemporary, modern way. I'm not Nostradamus here to predict something. All right. You start to get a sense of the range of possibilities for what people might go through. And then as you're listening to the client speak, you start to get a sense of like where their experiences kind of skew out and where they fall in the possibilities of experience. And one of the most basic ways to do this is to work with key life transits. Basically, everyone over 30, ask them the story of their Saturn return. Just ask people randomly, your friends, your parents, your siblings, your boyfriend or girlfriend, husband or wife, your children, which you probably know, and collect countless accounts of Saturn returns. And then if you're, you know, meeting slightly older people, which we all do, interview them about their Uranian opposition. Start at around age 40. Ask them what that was like when they turned 40 and how their life was different by the time that they were 44. Which, by the way, is the end of the Uranian opposition and the second Saturn the end of the Uranian opposition and the engagement of the second Saturn opposition. And so you start to see that there's a symmetry to this process and that one of these events leads to another event in a somewhat irregular but definitely accessible point of escalation through or development through a series of events. And what you're listening for, not dictating, but listening for, is a sense of, is this person at something akin to this transit at this time? It's not that you're imposing it on someone. And this is true for all of astrology. One of the things I describe in Astrology Revealed is looking at mundane charts and finding the picture of the thing in the chart. By far the best book for this, and I think one of the best books ever written, I've read a few, is by Jeffrey Cornelius, The Moment of Astrology, where he demonstrates chart after chart of matching the picture of the chart to the life, well, matching the picture of the chart to the circumstances of the chart, which is a test for radicality in a horary chart. There are strict rules of radicality, i.e. does the chart fit the scenario? But the thing you really want is, does the shoe fit in some way? And one of the ways to do that, and I forgot to give my rap at the beginning here, is that it's not easy to learn astrology, and you've got to throw your whole life into it, and you'll never come up for air if you're really doing it. But one of the ways to do this is to cast the chart for anything that has a time. So if there's a chart for a kid that went missing at 10:08 a.m. and you cast the chart, where's the picture of the missing kid in that chart? Maybe you can see it, maybe you can't. Give it a try. If a bus rolls over, cast the chart. They always put the time in. What about this chart looks like a bus rolling over? So forth. One of Lily's jokes is horary. The little kitty, will it be found? Friends, Leo is rising. That's his only comment. So you're looking for some semblance between the chart and the circumstances of the person, between the transits the person's at and the thing that they're describing. And if you've got the 38-year-old who's still living at home and acting in immature ways and sucking their thumb, and other people are paying for their food and they don't like going to work, you've got something to talk about with this person. You can say, basically, okay, I want you to know that you had your Saturn return 8 years ago. What have you been doing since then? What were you doing before then? And it's possible to do this in a way that you're not moralizing and not like laying down the law, though there will be times, I can think of about three or four in my career, where in some cautionary way I had to lay down the law. There are other things where, you know, there was one chart involving Mars conjunct Saturn in the ascendant, and I was literally jumping up and down saying how useful that aspect was. So after a while, you can start to tell what's in the chart. You can describe it, but you want to spend a lot of time tuning in and doing that semblance between the circumstances and the person, the circumstances of the person's life and the circumstances of the transit, and get some sense of where they're hooked into their growth process. Now, of these, the Saturn return, I think, is particularly now one of the most elusive, since the United States and apparently some other places, but especially the United States, seems to really be committed to being what Robert Bly called the sibling society. All kids, no grown-ups, no responsibility, no one in charge. And the sibling society is one reason why we can't get a consensus on whether we should bring a corrupt president to justice, because the siblings can't agree and they don't have any real sense of responsibility. And this has been deteriorating. There's other reasons also, and there's reasons for the deterioration. But the Saturn return is, of these transits, perhaps the most important one, because it assists in the building of a foundation of adulthood. And you will find that there were people who were very much adults prior to their Saturn return. They liked going to work. They were responsible parties in their relationships. They showed up. It may not have been perfect. It never is. But that Saturnian commitment to doing things and to participating and to taking responsibility for one's life is the thing that you're listening for when you're talking about a Saturn transit. And there will be stages. If we study the Saturn transit, we find out that little kids at around age 7 get their adult teeth. Their teeth start to come in, their grown-up teeth. And Saturn is associated with the teeth and the bones. And so getting your adult teeth at age 7 is kind of like now you're not a little kid anymore. You're getting your adult teeth. And then at age 14, there's another step that people take. Jews have the bar mitzvah at age 13. I think this is one of the most brilliant rituals that I've ever heard of. And if anyone's wondering why some people think that there's some conspiracy that the Jews run the world, I think it involves the bar mitzvah. The bar mitzvah means that you stand in front of the congregation and you prove you can read. That's interesting. And so at age 14, we have a developmental level where you should be able to think in some way and to relate to the world in a literate way and be able to speak and to be able to speak in front of adults. And but the Saturn cycle is coming under tough times right now. In one sense, it's the thing that's I think taking the most abuse from the internet and digital consciousness. By age 21, a person should be capable of driving a car safely. They should be able to handle alcohol. They should be able to vote. By age 21, you're at full majority, except for everything except being a senator and the president. I think you can be in the House of Representatives. Anyone knows that, 18 or 21? But by 21, you can be in the House of Representatives. You can vote. You can drink. You can serve in the army. You can get married. You can have sex. You can raise a family. And so someone of 21, you use a kind of a benchmark and you find out where this 21-year-old is at. And you will today find a huge diversity of places where 21-year-olds are at, perhaps more diverse than ever. And potentially, it's hard to say. There's a lot of media coverage of, like, you know, upstart young prodigies, and then just you look around the streets and there's a lot of kids swiping their phones, basically, well past the age of 21. But think about that. 7, adult teeth. 14, reading from a book in front of adults, and considered manhood and womanhood in the Jewish faith. Get ready to be an adult. Think like an adult. Age 21, now you are actually at a new stage of adulthood. Age 30, another stage of adulthood. So this Saturn cycle is describing stages of maturity. And the quadrature angles, those are called ages 7, 14, 21, and 29, 30, are one part of that cycle. And then, of course, there are going to be specific transits, the other kind of transits that are not key life transits. They're just ordinary transits. Somebody's got, you know, Saturn in Aquarius, but they've got a whole bunch of planets in Sagittarius. And around age 25 or something, Saturn goes over all of those planets. So you're going to work with the quad alignments, but also if you're sitting there listening to someone and the person is coming in for their Saturn return, and they've just had Saturn go over 8 planets in Sagittarius, you might say, "Hey, and what was up in between age 20, you know, 25 and 27 or something like that, probably a little younger." And listen to what they say. And what you're listening for is, do the experiences sound like Saturn? Do they sound like they're relating to a background or a natal condition of what it might be like to have 8 planets in Sagittarius? And when the two make contact, what is the result? And you have to do this in a way that's cautious to not judge, because you're not in a position to judge. And people have different developmental stages. But it's also incumbent upon astrologers to be guiding people in a way that is oriented on growth, maturity, and development. And so I look at key life transit theory as a kind of a developmental theory of you know, what people experience. And it's not simply a linear growth pattern, because you've got 5 cycles running simultaneously. And the way these things work is all 5 of these cycles start in different places, and then they all run concurrently. And so there'll be places where someone's second Chiron square will coincide with their Saturn return. My Chiron opposition coincided with my Saturn return. So there's going to be overlays on a lot of these, especially now that Chiron is in the act, which is, you know, relatively new. We're like the second generation of astrologers to really work with Chiron, assuming we're doing it. And one of the things I found with Chiron is that it is a sincere and honest bellwether for what's going on generally, and is a good shorthand method of checking out the way that a chart responds energetically. And one of the reasons I say that is because Chiron's meaning is so polyphonic. There are so many expressions of Chiron, potential expressions, that it is almost like a generic awareness-raising tool, that it goes into the dark places like a searchlight. It will strive to connect the potential of the natal chart with some experience in the world. So just to give an example, when I was, how old was I? 1989, I was born in 1964. I think I was 25. Right? Is that right? Yeah. didn't know nothing about Chiron. I knew a little bit about astrology, little teeny bit. One day I saw some student protests on TV in the office where I worked, the newsletter publishing office, where I had a great job. I could travel the country for free and stay in hotels and go to conferences, and it was totally cushy. I just had to write a newsletter that made, you know, Planet Waves look like the New York Times. I had to do a good job, but still a lot of freedom. And I saw a calling in watching the students at the City University get arrested. They hadn't been given civil disobedience training. The whole thing was FUBAR. And I thought, all right, I need to change my thing here. And that spring, I left my last job in 1989, 30 years ago, pretty much this month. And soon after, packed my bags and came upstate, left New Jersey, came upstate, packed my stuff and my kitty cats and got an apartment. And that was Chiron in my ascendant. I focused, I felt a calling, and I moved. And so when and started a business, and I've been in one iteration of that business after the next. Not strictly continuous, but newsletter related, journalism related, publishing, small scale publishing related. That one transit, I have the North Node rising, connected me. And when you listen to people describe their Chiron in the ascendant transits, you will get a sense of their relationship to that process of self-becoming. And in my case, I heard the calling. I knew what to do. I had the name of my publication. It just came to me. And I packed up my shit. And I thanked my boss and finished my work and came up to the mountains. Mind you, to be a poet and English teacher. And then 5 minutes later, I was a journalist, right? So I had this idea for a newsletter. And then, like, I had this dream of being a poet and an English teacher. And then the minute I got here, this huge story landed in my lap. And I'm like, okay, it's time to be a journalist. Didn't stop me from being an English teacher or a poet. But that's the North Node. And that was a Chiron activation. So if you're looking at someone's chart and you notice, you happen to remember that Chiron was in Capricorn from 2002 to 2005. And so their ascendant is early Capricorn. You're like, well, what was up in 2003? They're going to tell you a story. They're going to tell you something, and you're going to understand something about their ascendant. And I think that it's not just about, particularly with Chiron, it's not just about Chiron in the ascendant. It's about the ascendant. I think Chiron shines a kind of a light wherever it goes, and it brings out the true nature or the critical nature. Because you'll hear stories of people with Chiron and the ascendant where it was like really fucked up and they still hate that time in their life and still regret things that happened. And then your job as an astrologer is to help them find the things that they gained, to recover the tools, to recover the learning that they got, to recover the benefits that they got, to claim the victory or the knowledge or the transition of that time in their life in some way. And you are doing people a world of good by helping them claim their victories and claim their power and claim their knowledge. And it's almost impossible to steer someone wrong by saying, look, you survived it. You made it through and you kept going. Or you experimented with what you wanted to do and maybe you don't like it, but you still gave it a try and you had to give it a try, whatever it might be. So Chiron and the Ascendant, I don't consider to be a key life transit, but it is an honorary one in that you want to hear, you just want to hear something about them that's going to inform you about how that chart works and how they work. And so if you listen to enough stories of Chiron and the Ascendant, you will start to learn about the Ascendant. The Ascendant just has a certain feeling to it that's kind of hard to describe, but after you've watched Chiron go by, you know, 50 times or 60 times, you know, you'll get an idea. Well, though it's not strictly germane to Chiron, I could just share another personal account involving the Ascendant, which is that some years later, Saturn went over my Ascendant. Saturn was in Cancer and went over my Ascendant. And it was early in the Planet Waves story, and I was still somewhat young as an astrologer. I think I started in 95. I think this was in 2004. So I don't know, long or short, I'm not sure. But I had to move off of Vashon Island. It was time to move off of Vashon Island. And I moved to Seattle. And the day that I signed my lease in Seattle, Chiron was at 6 degrees and Saturn was at 6 degrees and 31 minutes of Cancer, and my ascendant is 6 degrees and 32 minutes. So I signed the lease with 1 arc minute to go. And 4 weeks later, Jonathan Kaner said, "It's come to England and get your job writing for the Daily Mirror." And I was gone. I set the apartment up, moved five fish tanks or something, set the whole place up, and then a month later, I was gone. So note that the ascendant is sensitive to transits. And when you hear a couple of accounts of people going through transits to their ascendant, you start to figure out how they relate to this most important thing in their chart. And are you getting a sense of like how you get a feel for what astrology really is? Because if you're reading the books, and the books contradict, and then the books make no sense, and or they're absolutely terrible, or you can't figure them out, or these three contradict each other, or whatever it might be. That's because you can study the rules of baseball, which I got that PDF the other night and started studying the rules of baseball, but that's very different than either getting on the field and playing or watching the game be played in real time. And so what you're doing is you want to have a combination of watching and playing and knowing some rules. But in baseball, the rules are very cut and dried. With astrology, they're all over the fucking place. And so this is why it's much more akin to an art than it is to some kind of a hard science or a specific game with specific rules and a winner and a loser. And the role you're playing is helping the client navigate the passage of time through these multiplicitous transits going on. And you're going to be guided as much as possible by the client. The chart should be tapping on your wrist a little bit, but the client should be leading you by the hand. And you don't let them lead you off a cliff, but you want to let them lead you as much as you can until you really understand the trip that they are on. And then you start to figure out what your particular point of intervention is. What is the one thing that you're going to say? What is the... So I work with a client this morning who sent me like a 2,000-word explication of her transits. And she was really, really stuck and she didn't want to do them. And she was feeling like shit yesterday, like probably half the planet was. And she came through with them. And the only thing I could do in the session was listen, listen, listen. Because anytime I said something, it wasn't going in. So I just shut up after a while and let her explain to me everything. I would drop in a question, okay, check something. And eventually, after like about 50 minutes of this, maybe longer, she was kind of talked out and needed some feedback. And so as her astrologer, I offered her some feedback. Now, I charge a good fee, and I want to make sure that the person is getting what they paid for, but you can't work too hard for that. And the thing that they came for might be something that emerges as a completely surprise discovery to everyone. So there's really a lot of going with the flow and hanging loose rather than tight and being observant and listening between the lines. And just, it just helps to get a lot of practice doing this. So Chiron transits, as I'm suggesting here, they describe what Melanie called a healing journey. There's a kind of a quest involved in Chiron. And the most interesting thing about Chiron is if you isolate this one cycle, which it's good to do for some intake sessions, and I think a lot, I would say do it for 20, 30, do it for as many as you possibly can. And then you start to get good at it, and it starts to get even more interesting, is that because Chiron's pattern is so strange, you can have your Chiron first square at 5.5 or age 22. Now, there's a big difference between 5.5 and 22, and it's the same transit. And so people born in like the late 80s are going to be in this 5.5-year-old group. And then the later it gets, the slightly later the transit gets. Until if you're born around now, you have your Chiron transit at 22 because you're going to be on the slow side of Chiron. And so when you map out a Chiron cycle, you're going to have this pattern that's irregular. It's elliptical. When all the planets travel in elliptical paths, as Kepler proved, but some are really elliptical, like Pluto and Chiron. And particularly with Chiron, because it's got such a short orbit, everyone goes through the ellipse pretty quickly. And what I have found is that it reveals a series of events that are related, but the person who has the transits is unlikely to connect them. So one of the ways I've structured the Chiron transits exercise is to, these days I don't do it as a session. I don't write them out anymore. I just, when I've got the person on the phone in the first intake session, I take a little time. When they like first call me for, you know, like, and we're setting up and I'm explaining how much it costs and all this stuff. If they seem like they're going to go forward, I pull up their chart, I pull up the Chiron transits, and I just rattle off about 7 or 8 of them. And then they provide me with a written account. That used to be a whole session in the past, and I would pretty much check every single conjunction that Chiron made, and it was revelatory to see the things that come out where the chart just bursts into three-dimensional life. It just goes from being like this flat kind of sketch drawing that's not really even colored in or three-dimensional to just emerging as this living thing, because this very neutral energy, Chiron, is just going through and being like, ring that bell, ring that bell. Okay, now we're going to ring Saturn's bell. Okay, now we're going to ring Mars's bell. Oh, Jupiter's bell, finding Buddhism. Oh, that's exciting. Chiron on the 7th, get married, you know. And it's, you have to like people and what they go through to be able to do this, right? There's just no way that you can be an astrologer, unless, of course, you want to be a mundane astrologer or research astrologer or kind of an author or something like that. Even then, you know, you need a lot of experience reading charts and engaging with people. And I think, you know, 50-50 mundane and clients. Okay, so Chiron, the exercise I would give with Chiron is, sorry for jumping around a little bit here, each one of these transits has kind of its own scenario. And what I would ask them was, what is the theme of that scenario? Now, if you've ever taken an English class, you know that theme is the hardest concept to teach the students to spot. Theme is like the underlying unspoken message of a book. Books that are too preachy, you know, the theme is kind of shallow and dumb. But the really good books, the theme can be really subversive. The theme, the underlying message can come through in very sly ways. And so I would ask them to spot the theme of each of those transits and then to tell me the meta-theme of the whole cycle. So if the Saturn cycle, which it almost always is about maturity and adulthood, okay, the Chiron cycle is going to be much more multidimensional. It lasts longer. It's crazy because you can have one person can have a transit at 5.5 and somebody else can have the same transit at 22 years old. This is really interesting. And that, those, all those kind of seemingly scattered transits also have a kind of a meta theme or a message to them. And when you're working on this level with people, of helping them collect the wisdom of their experiences, first of all, you don't have to labor as hard to make a prediction in some way or to guide them toward a certain outcome. It's much gentler than that, and you're letting them lead the way, which is really the only ethical therapy, is to let people lead the way as much as possible and not be attached to their outcomes. And the Chiron one, you'll see, is just infinitely interesting in its manifestations and in a lot of times the I had a series of readings at the end of last year and very early in 2019 where I kept getting these things back, wondering how the fuck the person even lived through that. And I had just been through some really, really hard stuff in 2018. So I got these series of transits where I thought, wow, what I've been through is like absolutely nothing compared to this. And I would just read it like thinking, how did this person survive this? Then I've got the person on the phone and can't be too dramatic, can't be dramatic at all. And would hear where they're at. And, you know, lo and behold, they were at somewhere and they were, you know, ready to move forward. All right. So that's Chiron. And I think that that's, you know, an important cycle to work with, obviously. Uranus, there's really one important transit that's, you know, utilitarian, and almost everyone goes through it. And it is a corollary to the Saturn return, in that the Saturn return is calling on a level of structure and responsibility, where Uranus transits are calling for a level of experimentation and transformation into unforeseen shapes and forms. So many of these, in one sense, all of them require a level of personal reinvention. But the Uranian opposition in particular is a major checkpoint. It is of equal importance to the Saturn return and usually of equal impact. And if the Saturn return has not been completed, the Uranian opposition can seem like a disaster. And if the Saturn return has been completed, it will usually go a little bit better. So that's why you want to listen for the story of the Saturn return before you talk about the Uranian opposition. You want to have an idea of what they were doing with that maturity thing at age 29, 30. Did anything happen at all? Dave Rell, the former owner of the Astrology Center of America, who I don't know if any of you had the pleasure of knowing, and half the world fucking hated him and half the world absolutely loved him. I was on the Love Him site, and I would kind of laugh at the people who hated him because they knew why they hated him, but it was misguided. And he said once, see, if you don't go through your Saturn return the first time, you just keep going through it over and over perpetually. Oh, that's interesting. And if we use Steve Forrest's test, the person's, you know, 41 and they hate going to work, it's like, oh, I've got a Saturn return problem. Let's go back to the Saturn return and see what's going on with that. So you're using these as like developmental platforms in a very loose and casual way, at least in your presentation, but you really have to pay attention. And you're just sort of gently orienting the person on what their potential is at space and time and helping them maybe tidy up some things in the past, especially with Chiron, because a lot comes up in these transits. And you find out where they're at now, and you kind of massage their life a little bit as they describe to you what's going on. And partly how you're massaging their life experience is how you respond, your open-minded way, and helping them claim the benefits. Now, the Uranian opposition should be, generally is, a complete reinvention of some kind, or a whole new expression of some facet of their being. So you're listening for that reinvention thing. Now, in my Saturn return, I bought my astrologer on my ephemeris on my 30th birthday, knowing my Saturn return was going on, but not knowing shit about it because I didn't have an ephemeris and I hadn't really read an astrology book. But I knew that was my Saturn return. So I thought, well, today's the day, my 30th birthday is the day I'm going to buy an ephemeris. I still got it. And when I was about 43, I bought a digital camera and reinvented myself as an artist, which I always was, but it was kind of latent. It didn't come out. And that's, I was living in Europe, and there was lots to take pictures of, and I figured out that there was infinite models available on Craigslist, and had a reinvention. So you're looking for some of that. And if the person is 42 or 41, and they're hesitating, find out how happy they are. Find out about their marriage or their relationship or relationships, and just like get a sense of what's going on, and propose casually that they're at an age where, hey, the energy's all about self-reinvention here. What do you see yourself possibly doing or being or becoming? Who might you be? Is something you want to do? Is something going on in there? Are you like, do you have like a lot of paint sitting in the closet or paintings? Early in my career, I kept meeting the people with their basements full of paintings. I guess because I did a lot of astrology in Woodstock early on in my career, where there's a lot of people who are artists of one stripe or another. But you want to be listening for the paint in the closet and the paintings in the basement and the guitar in the case and the countries they want to visit. And you kind of help them feel good about doing the thing that they want to do. And the Uranian opposition is particularly important time for that. Now, fair to say, a lot of Uranian oppositions are really fucking hard for people. It is the time of the midlife crisis, though this gets stretched out in baby boomerese. The midlife crisis happens when you're like 71 now, but in reality, the Uranian opposition is the midlife crisis. And think of like the two poles of an electromagnet kind of like reaching full opposition, and like what's the person becoming, like what's going on. And so, you know, you might find somebody is just like terrified and contracted and shut down and clinging at age 41. It's like, okay, so, you know, we want to spend a little time listening and find out maybe how that got to be that way. And you just kind of ease into the subject. Now, if you're working with someone who's, you know, 47 and they're heading into their Chiron return, that's the time to find out about all their previous Chiron transits, their Saturn return, and their Uranian opposition. And by the time you've done that, you're going to have a sense of what this Chiron return is likely to be about at least halfway, right? You'll have some sense of it. Okay, so practice is the thing. All right, Neptune transits. I've described Neptune as being about one's relationship to truth and delusion. Neptune is a very subtle and at times challenging planet that also has a wide diversity of expressions. But ultimately, where Neptune is concerned, you want to be listening for two things. What is the person's relationship to the truth? And what is their relationship to alcohol? And the other drugs come in, but alcohol is the readily available, socially acceptable, almost mandatory, because you're really weird if you don't drink, or you were till recently. What is their relationship to basically truth and substances? And what is the relationship between truth and substances? And with that, you're looking for boundary related subject matter. The Neptune square can be a challenging transit because people often have a hard time being truthful with themselves and being truthful with others. And I think that one of the most distinctive characteristics of this plane of reality and of our particular planet, which contains the word plane, is the ability to lie to oneself and to others. So imagine, if you would, a world where that were not possible. If people just told the truth, because that's all they could do, because lying wasn't considered an option in this like dualistic, duplicitous plane of reality where you can just basically say whatever the fuck you want. People can believe whatever the fuck they want. And we live in this kind of spiritual anarchy. I clicked on someone sent me a Facebook wave. I'm like, clicked on their thing thinking, who the hell is this person? Is it a bot or something? And they had a Trump thing up saying that the reason people were saying that Trump was guilty of collusion was to cover for all the crimes of Hillary Clinton. I'm thinking, Jesus fucking Christ, you really can believe anything you want on this planet. And I did not wave back. So this is... that kind of crap is Neptune issues, and it takes spine to have a relationship with the truth. Where do you find spine? You find spine in Saturn. So you want to look at that relationship between how they relate to their Saturn, how they relate to their Neptune. Oh, and what do you do with probably the most difficult to read set of aspects are Saturn-Neptune aspects. That should be a whole day's workshop of Saturn-Neptune aspects. I still find them tricky, and I'm glad that I have a method of letting people explain to me their Saturn-Neptune stuff. But the word is really synthesis. I found it a lot of Saturn-Neptune contacts in mundane astrology. Things like the hydrogen bomb are invented, or there's just these things that are synthesized where oil and water are forced to mix. And this is the relationship people have with truth, where there's like oil and there's water, and the two don't mix, and they kind of have to after a while. You have to be able to, unless you're satisfied being deceptive and deceiving yourself and being deceived, the maturity factor of Neptune is one's relationship to the truth and to, setting aside wishful thinking and determining whether the person is discerning. And I think with Neptune, the whole theme of boundaries is very, very important. Where there's Neptune prominent in the chart, especially by transit and by natal, there can be situations involving transgression, deception, fraud. All that is true. And then the question is, how's the person responding? What's up? How is the person responding? You'll have people sit there and tell you, yeah, I know I'm lying to myself. I know I really don't want to do this. I don't really love this person, but I'm in the relationship and all my bills are paid and it's really nice. I've got this nice Jaguar and, you know, we go on vacation twice a year and all that. And you're like listening, thinking, okay, waiting for your opening basically to kind of ask a really simple question. All right, Pluto. And note, by the way, that the Uranian opposition, the Neptune square, and the Pluto square all happen in close succession. I believe it's Pluto, Neptune, then Uranus. It changes from time to time. Pluto, Pluto's been at perihelion. Now it's going out to aphelion, so it's outside of Neptune's average orbit, and it's slowing down, and soon will be taking 20 years to go through a sign, whereas it was recently taking just 12 to 14 years to go through a sign. So anyway, Pluto transits are an encounter with the unstoppable force. And when you are listening to someone's Pluto transits, you listen to how they're handling what in some way, on some level, seems to be inevitable or enforced, and determining their relationship to that. Pluto is one of the deepest strata of what you might think of as tectonic growth movement. It's the continent that's going to move, and there's nothing that can stop it. If you're wondering what it's like when you put Saturn and Pluto together in an opposition, just imagine the World Trade Center falling down. Imagine, as Billy Name said to me, the World Trade Center being dropped like marionettes. That was the Saturn-Pluto opposition within 4 weeks. Saturn-Pluto were exactly opposite on the day that Bush was given the August 6th presidential daily briefing. Bin Laden determined to strike in the United States. That was on August 6th, and on September 11th, the World Trade Center were dropped like marionettes. And that's the power of Pluto. And so when you get to the Pluto square, that it's usually one of the gentler manifestations of Pluto because it's kind of a readiness aspect. And you want to ask yourself, what is this person's relationship to growth on the nitty-gritty level of I must be absolutely real about who I am? And it is actually possible to dodge that one. It doesn't usually go well, and as we know, there are people who seem to dodge everything and then have lots of money because they're busy dodging things and seem to have power and happiness, but whatever. You want to look for the relationship to that. It's like a very, very deep Saturn level of maturity. That's my experience of Pluto is it's almost like a super Saturn, even though it's the unstoppable force, and Saturn is the immovable object. Pluto usually wins that one, by the way. Leads to the Pluto-Saturn conjunction being a very interesting study here. We're going to learn a lot in 2020 as this happens. And we're going to see what happens when the next time the immovable object meets the unstoppable force, which way things go. So all in all, you want to use these transits as a gentle general guideline to help you orient on space and time and progress in ways that are applicable to most of Western civilization. It's always interesting to hear about other civilizations and to hear when they have their initiation rituals and when they have their maturity rituals and what they do, and to note the correspondences or lack of correspondences between these key life transits. You know, it would be interesting to know what the age of 29 has meant in cultures around the world. Now that the whole world is becoming westernized and everybody's running around with cell phones in the Aboriginal bush and in Africa, it might be hard to have a clear sense of that, but there's old books to read. In some ways, the old order is still standing. There's still morphogenetic fields for all of these things, prior to various stages of breakdown of the meaning, and it's they almost always come back in some way, and they almost always have a way of expressing themselves that's appropriate. I remain the most concerned about people at their Saturn returns right now, because I'm thinking we are facilitating a massive series of subgenerations of people who are not really having their Saturn returns. They're not really going through the ritual fully and not really claiming their thing, and they're waiting to just be offered a job for $75 an hour with an assistant when they haven't really done much for the world. All right, so that's that presentation from those very loose notes that I sent around. Anyone want to ask a question or add a thought to this? I would be most grateful. So star 2 does that. You must be thinking something. And I'm eagerly looking for a hand up. Anyone? Or am I actually online? Can someone raise their hand to show that I'm online? Okay, Skype looks good. Ah, 4 hands up. All right, thank you. Max, good evening. Welcome back.
Good evening. I'm still processing everything you said, so I don't have a question at this moment. So
no, but you had a very exciting Saturn opposition, though, that really was quite enlightening last week. I thought that was the gem of the class last week, was, you know, before and after musicianship.
Thank you.
Yeah, fantastic case study in Saturn. Worth writing that story for a little compendium of Saturn transits, which would be great fun, by the way, to assemble a project like that of people's accounts of their transits for those. So I'm going to leave the line open, and let's bring Joshua into the conversation. Good evening.
Hello there. I was curious about the Saturn conjunct Pluto that's going to happen in January of 2020 and how that might look over, say, like a natal Neptune or a natal Mars, actually. That's what I mean.
Right. Well, I would want to know the Mars aspect pattern. So you want to know the whole pattern. It's like, has Mars got squares or trines coming off of it, for one thing? And and then what is the person's desire? How do they manage their will? How do they manage their going to do it power?
Okay. I think it's trines. Trine Jupiter is one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, And you know, what was going on in 04 when Chiron went by? So one of the ways I will, if I'm seeing a big transit to a planet like that, is I'll just check when Chiron was there. And I'm not going to make a prediction based on it.
Okay.
But it gives me a sense of just how it shakes, rattles, and rolls.
Okay.
So do you know when Chiron, I imagine you're talking about your chart.
Yeah, I am.
You're born in 88. We're looking at 88, 98. That's 10.
Yeah, 2004.
You're 18 or something? 16, 18?
16, 17.
Okay. So where were you at that age?
Good question. I think I just switched high schools. So I switched from like a big Christian school to like a smaller Christian school. Really private.
Okay, so there's a little Jupiter in there. There's your Jupiter. There's the Jupiter trine, right? The expression of, you know, religious education. What house is this all going on in? Where's Capricorn?
Capricorn's in the 11th.
Right.
And then Jupiter's in the 2nd.
Okay. Well, how did you make that transition?
It was all right. Well, it was interesting from going from somebody who was at a small school, less popular, and then became, I felt like it was, you'd be kind of talked about much more than you're used to. So that's definitely one thing. All of a sudden I was like, kind of switched from like a good guy to the bad boy. Just because I was interested in outside thought, I guess, because it was super conservative. So interested in alcohol and drugs and
chewing gum.
Yeah. Rock and roll. The whole thing.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, that's cool. And so note the relationship to the public, right? Because you described a contrast between you and the community.
Yeah.
Of the school, right? Where your role in that all changed. Now, you have other planets up there, right? You've got a few things going on in Capricorn.
Yeah.
But what is Mars like, 20 degrees? Mars is at 20 or something? Is that right?
Mars is at 20. Yeah, Mars is at 20, Neptune's at 10, and then Saturn and Uranus are conjunct at 1 and 2.
So that was the culmination of a few years of transitions. But look, it sounded like you found, I mean, that you're talking sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right? And you were the one, right? So think of some grander equivalent of that now on some massive scale. Okay. I mean, rock star, like, do you play an instrument? Quickly, get a harmonica.
I like the drums.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. And then also, I think my education, it kind of took a little bit of a backslide. I wouldn't even say that. I would just say I changed directions with it. I didn't really care as much what other people thought about what I was studying. I studied the stuff I wanted to.
Right.
Even though they were, I would choose the books that they wouldn't.
Okay, so another example of contrast
even if they chose,
between
like,
you
an
and
author,
society.
I would choose, like, yeah.
Okay. Sorry. But, yeah, what you
that, makes,
say.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right, because the contrast keeps coming up, right? You're not exactly comparing yourself to them, but you're seeing the contrast in what you want and what they want, and you're going to do what you want. That's Mars.
Yeah.
Dignified in Capricorn.
Definitely the desire. Yeah.
All right.
That's helpful.
So you see how easy it is just to kind of fit, just to, like, you're not really writing in like, you know, spray paint. You're more just sketching lightly and trying on different pictures of what. And you remember what house you're in, right? That's your context.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the, meaning the location, who's involved, the possible developmental stage of life, because the houses kind of describe a series of developmental stages as well. Another interesting topic. Victoria, your mic is open. And then Amanda.
Yeah, hey.
Hey there.
Oh, hi, Amanda's on.
Yes.
You can hear me, right?
I can.
Okay.
Welcome.
But this was just a note that I actually wrote in, but you didn't see it. It's something to bear in mind with the Saturn return self-actualization imperative, you know, or not, but and the Uranus opposition reinvention. A question, and it's really interesting to see how these things play out in charts of people that you know or know something about, to see how that actualization, how that like stepping up to a different level of maturity, you know, as an adult, how that and the reinvention fulfill its messages in the chart.
Mm-hmm.
So to like tie the reinvention back to what you see as the direction of the chart, the ultimate, you know, the potential of the chart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just kind of a random reinvention, but how is that fulfilling what they came in to fulfill?
Yeah.
Oh, and hey, Mac. And we were speaking about, to tie that thought into Max's really fascinating story, and thanks again for sharing that last time. He has a very Plutonian, very strong Pluto element in his chart. He's got, as I recall, Moon conjunct Pluto in Scorpio in the 8th house, as far as I recall, yeah. And so that Saturn opposition was squared.
Wait a minute. I think that was in my chart. It says Sagittarius.
Oh, really?
Moon.
Oh, yeah. He's kind of young to have. He's kind of young to have Pluto and Scorpio.
Oh, I cast your chart wrong. Oh well. But in any event, it was a Pluto. But what house is your little bummer? I mean, it's not a bummer. It's just that it throws my little like neat little theory here. But
it could still be right.
There was a Pluto square to that. I don't have time to recast it here. I don't want to take up too much time.
Hold on a second.
But
I got him. All right, so
but
it's Moon Pluto and Sag. It's a 4-degree Moon Pluto ninth house conjunction in Sag.
Oh, it's ninth house.
Mm.
Well, it's still a strong Pluto signature. And
yeah, it's eighth, ninth, and it could be tenth. It could also, because it's Pisces rising, and this is in Sagittarius.
Because it
was
the house on the house system.
Yeah. Well, you look at all of the above. It's all of the above kind of a thing. It's you look at that in layers. You know?
And there was Pluto was square that Saturn opposition at the time of his very profound experience.
Saturn opposition.
And when I saw that, even though I had the wrong birth data, I don't see how that's possible because I still have a Moon-Pluto conjunction, but whatever. So it underscored that Plutonian theme. And he's very young and very involved with, he has a strong Pluto quality, you know, the near-death experience at such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Pluto signature.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and there was a Pluto transit going on also at the same time. There was a Saturn
Pluto
square going on.
It was a Pluto square. Pluto square, that Saturn opposition.
Yes, because Pluto was in late. No, Pluto was in Capricorn, I believe, and Saturn was in Libra because it was the opposition. Right. So in any event, you're always looking at the whole chart. You're always working the whole chart at once. So I don't mean to intend that you're only looking at that specific thing. The whole symphony will eventually play. It's just that it doesn't all play at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different parts.
Right, and you see different things like emerge, you know, a few times. But okay, I will turn my time over to Chairman.
That would, Chairman will yield to Amanda Painter, the lady from Maine.
Hello.
Senator Painter, welcome.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. It's weird since I'm not hearing myself coming through my headset. I'm not sure if you can hear me. So I feel like you've sort of obliquely answered this, but I was really curious, like particularly with Capricorns or people with a heavy Capricorn signature, with this Saturn-Pluto conjunction coming, it's kind of there, like, could that be felt by some people as like another Saturn return, in essence, especially if they haven't had one yet? Or would it kind of depend on like where their sun is? Like if their sun's really early in the sign, is it not really going to be that effective? Or is this really like a wait and see kind of a situation?
Yeah, you have to really be listening. I mean, my client this morning had 22 Cancer rising, had 23 mm-hmm. cap, 22 and change Capricorn setting. And mm-hmm. then get this. Scorpio full, Sagittarius full, Capricorn full up to 20 degrees.
Huh.
I believe a total of 13 or 14 points in Scorpio, Sag, and Capricorn, meaning that this person had had nonstop Pluto transits since Pluto was in Scorpio.
Right. So like for the last 20 years or something.
Yeah. So now, and there was nothing else in Capricorn. So now this this is why, I mean, I really let her take the lead on this one. And like, because like, wow, you know, what do you say about that, right? This thing, I mean, take a look at that chart. It's like Ceres, Saturn, Sun, Mercury, Pluto, all within about 2 degrees.
Wow.
And this is happening on her seventh. So you would, there was a time when astrologers could make dire predictions.
Right.
And send the client home crying. That time is not now. That is finito.
Right. No, and I was even just sort of considering it as more of like a dynamic growth point or phase.
Yeah. But this is, as Victoria said, maximum density. Holy shit. And look at the right. world right now, like it's almost unbearable to do so, and it's nuts. And you think about the decay in society, when the president can say, well, he just dodged a bullet of being basically accused of massive, humongous felonies while in office, because they couldn't find criminal intent. And now he's admitting criminal intent. And who cares? Who cares? If you walked around New York right. City and asked people their opinion, it's like you'd be lucky to get one. It would be kind of fun, actually. So we're going to see kind of the apotheosis of Pluto in Capricorn. Which Uranian astrologer said the theme of this is heads will roll. Back toward the beginning of Pluto and Capricorn, I was talking to her, and these Uranian astrologers right. are sometimes very, very smart people. And she said she was being lectured in astrology by like a 78-year-old woman. It's like, okay, lay it on me. Heads will roll. Okay. Noted. Heads will roll. And look what's happened. Now, not the right heads, not enough heads. But talk about the Me Too movement. Talk about a heads will roll movement. Oh, let's just get the guillotine and just chop them all off. And there was a phase for a while where some people got in some trouble for some things. But, gee, it would be nice if as many people who ran the banking scandal, the subprime mortgage scandal, a few of those heads rolled. They really didn't. So, you know, how much democracy and freedom can people stand? You know, the thing that concerns me about all this is the equation of people who don't know who they are will tend to resort to violent means to find out. That's the part that I find the most nerve-wracking. And a society that doesn't know who it is will resort to war with another society to find out. And think of 9/11, the big jingoistic, oh, now we know who we are. We're going to kill Iraq. Chest thumping. It was the same with the first Iraq war. Oh, now we know who we are. Woo-hoo, wave the flag. Literally. We know who we are. We're killing Iraqis. So that's where I get nervous. That's where I'm nervous about all this. Just between us and everyone listening. You know, and look, we're living in a society that doesn't really respect Saturn. That's the thing with, you know, the rule now is you do it because you can, not because it's right, not because it's wrong. You just do it because you can. That's the part that messes with my head. You know, and because I can means it's right. I can mess you up, therefore it's right that I do so. And the logic of the perpetrator is one thing. The logic of the people who accept it is, to me, the really scary thing. So, you know... Oops, let me just figure out whose gadget that is making that, I think.
Who's typing?
Oh, it's typing. That's funny. Somebody's typing. I can't. There's static on several of these. It might be Max. I'm gonna mute you.
Oh, sorry. Is that me?
Yeah. No, that's good. That's... That's called taking notes.
I was thinking, right?
That's what you were saying. We're in school. Yeah. Let's take notes.
Eric, actually, I don't want to be narcissistic or take up the thing, but I had one quick question about the Aries point in a needle.
Please do.
Okay, cool. As from my data, which you probably have, and everybody on this call has been on the previous episode has, I have Pisces rising, and I have, if we're going to do whole sign houses, Aries point is in the second house. Mm-hmm. I have Saturn in Aries in the second house. I wanted to know if, you know, what kind of elements, what that means, basically, if you had any... sort of insights or elements about that, what things that could be representative of that aspect.
I'd want to unfold that a little bit, like find out. I'd really want to listen to transits to that point. But short of doing that, there's two important aspects that you've got. Three. The first one that comes to mind is that the Pluto and the Moon trine, that Saturn conjunct the node.
You know, there was one chart involving Mars conjunct Saturn in the ascendance, and I was literally jumping up and down saying how beautiful that aspect was.
Well, you have the South Node. That's a different dynamic, and they're both retrograde. But look at the Jupiter-Saturn aspect. Right, the aspects tell a lot of the story. Is there any way this...
I'm sorry.
Did I lose you?
I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened, but I guess there was some sort of loop in the recording, but it totally went back to like another to an earlier part of the recording.
That's
could
crazy.
Could you please restart?
I heard that.
I'm sorry.
I thought it was you quoting me. Okay. So Saturn rising.
Okay, so we both heard the same thing. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not tripping. But we could mess with you, but we won't. So Saturn rising is, you know, that's challenging. And there's something about Saturn on the south node that's about, to me, seems like forgetting something, about shaking off a self-concept. But
No.
What's that?
Oh, I'm still on.
Yeah.
Well, how can you still hear me?
Because I didn't mute you. Everyone's open.
Oh.
So, but look, Jupiter, Saturn, how much of your life feels like you've got the last chance to do something?
Last chance, when you mean say last chance?
Like, this is the last lifetime you can figure this one thing out.
Oh, totally.
Okay. So there's a clue. Jupiter square the nodes is every bit as important as South Node conjunct Saturn. So I would suggest working with you have South Node conjunct Saturn, right? Are you?
Oh, because the North Node is in. Okay, yeah.
I know some programs don't draw the South Node in. So this is a chart that requires a close reading, I would say. This is not an easy answer to that, but the easy answer as far as studying is concerned is to check out that Jupiter square Saturn with the nodes involved. Just isolate
with the
that.
Nodes involved. Yeah,
sure.
I checked out the square, but I don't know the when you say with the nodes involved, how would I go into.
Well, I'm saying by involved, I mean that Jupiter is square Saturn, and then Saturn and Jupiter are both aspecting the nodes. Saturn's on the south node, Jupiter is square of the nodes. So by involved,
okay.
I mean they're in the aspect pattern.
Right. So, again, I know you hate commentary, but are there any good resources for?
I would work with transits. I would suggest looking at past transits. And let me think about the resources thing, about what might be a potentially good book to work with. And you know, when you read, you just have to keep your bullshit filters up and recognize that people say things that might be appropriate to say in 1970, but aren't appropriate to say in 2019. Right?
Oh, I wouldn't know that.
Arlo Guthrie can make a joke about faggots in Alice's Restaurant, right? Well, if two of you walked into the psychiatrist's office and sang a verse of Alice's Restaurant, they think you're both faggots. And the crowd laughs, and 20, 30, whatever years later, we all kind of chuckle. But that was appropriate then. And it's only appropriate now if it's right. South Park. So the astrology books are the same way. They're going to say things that are like period pieces. Basically, is how I think of them. And so you have to filter for that. And the last chance lifetime comes out of Mark Edmund Jones. And I could never find this, but Isabel Hickey quotes Mark Edmund Jones as Jupiter square Saturn as a last chance lifetime. And the nodes power that up. And you've got Aries point stuff going on. I would say keep playing music. And then do things different. If you get some idea, try it.
What do you mean different?
By that I mean that the people who drop out of Berkeley tend to be the great musicians, and the ones that stay in Berkeley... Not so much. You want like a year of Berkeley, and you want to get the fuck out. So by different, I mean do let the muse take you. Music is about the muse. As a kind of like perpetually struggling music student, I have to remind myself that music is about the muse. And you're making music when the muse enters you. So just keep inviting the muse in and making music. And, you know, you've got a heck of a Mars. And you've got something to say. How do I know that? Because anybody with Mars square Saturn has something to say. A lot to say. Because you've got to express that square. So these squares all want expression. And the transits will give you a little clue. Now you've got Chiron coming over that. You're going to find out all about this pattern. Because Chiron's in town. And you're doing great. You were born in 1996? Not 86?
Yeah.
Just keep playing music, Max. And the things you think are your craziest, most outrageous ideas are probably your very best ideas.
Oh, yeah.
In my old opinion. Yes. In my curmudgeonly opinion. Yes. I promise you. So work with those. Work with the things you think are your completely most outrageous, craziest concepts. You don't have to be David Byrne to turn the abandoned ferry station into a musical instrument. Which he did.
What does that mean?
Just look it up. He turned an entire abandoned ferry station into a musical instrument. The project is famous. It's listed. So you're a young, gifted, everybody agrees, young, gifted musician. Do things. Go see the Elton John movie. It will inform and enlighten you. Right? You've got the discipline. You've got you have the scholarship and the regimen and the practice and that becomes the framework to burst out and do something that nobody's done or nobody's done for 50 years.
Wow. Great. I'm very excited. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to hear you play. I can't believe I never have. So, if you have an MP3.
No, you have.
I have? Did you send me a recording once? Or do you sit down at a piano?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Well, if you would please send me something, I would love to hear it and connect, you know, or reconnect, you're playing to who you are. Any other thoughts out there? I've got Carolyn, Edie, Joanne, Amy, Suzanne. Anyone want to say hello or run something past us? All right, so let's take it up on the list, and if there's anything to talk about, and plot and scheme, what the next class might be. And as far as those who want to be long-term students, really what I'm looking for is your energy, your commitment, your passion about learning, and in particular, your passion about writing. Because that, for anyone who studies astrology with me, is going to be a writing program, because I think that's just so crucial to combine the power of literacy with the philosophical frame of astrology. And so that remains an open offer, and I've got some concepts how to structure that, which are much more loose than they were 6 months ago, but nonetheless. And any other thoughts, anybody out there? Anybody with the mic open? Anybody who spoke has the mic open? All right.
Yeah, I see that your moon and Pluto conjunction is Sag. I just wanted to put that out there. I got your chart up. Hey, Max.
Yeah, you confuse Pluto with Scorpio. Carolyn, what's up?
I'm just really, really loving this, and it's getting me to go back and look at all these different, you know, times, which has not been that easy for it to do. But I also wanted to say, yeah, that I've had Pluto, a lot of intensity with Pluto right now, you know, for the last couple of years, and I've been through so much, which I won't go into. We don't have time. I thought I was going to, you know, not be here a couple of years ago, but I'm stronger than ever, and I feel like, I don't want to say it's all a gift, because it's been really hard, but, you know, I've had, Pluto, doesn't hit you over the head, it seems to move, it moves, it's like the cosmic bulldozer, it feels like, you know, whereas Uranus is boom, very often. But right now I have Pluto, transiting Pluto, opposing my natal Saturn in the fourth house. And I've really experienced that. To me, maybe you can enlighten me. The fourth house, I mean, I've gone through a lot with my home, you know, period. Just tossing out tons of stuff and, you know, just changing it all around. But also, isn't the fourth house like deep emotional roots?
Yep.
Because I feel like I've been clearing out so much.
Yep.
And I don't feel like the same person from a couple of years ago. And I also have the Chiron opposition right now. And I have a question in that, because one of the things that happened during, and I'll be brief, one of the things that happened during the Pluto opposition was I had three eye surgeries and I lost 30 pounds and nobody knows why. You know, and that was pretty intense. But I wanted to ask, I'm having a nodal return. And I don't know if you want to mention, address this at all. Because my, and I'm wondering if that, it feels like, could that kind of, you know, offset some of this? That's you know, the intensity because, anyway, I just wanted to share because I also do a Buddhist practice, a chanting that's pretty powerful, and it stresses, you know, just really transformation and really strengthening your life force as you move through this. I don't want to say anything else. I just wanted to, didn't want to miss sharing something because I'm really looking at the, trying to look at the dates of some of these things going into my past now. It's very fascinating.
Yeah, right. And so you know, this is a whole new depth of self-study, and you'll learn your life in a whole new way. And you could fill a notebook with the notes on these transits. And then once you've done that, you know, pick somebody who likes you and do a miniature version of that and then try it again. And you will soon be an astrologer.
I've loved astrology for years and years. I've studied it. But I had a lot of interruptions, which I'm going to go back now and look and see what, you know, what those transits were. Because I've always felt transits were super important. But so I continually go back to astrology. That and music. And those two things have really helped me a lot to move through a lot of stuff. So, so I want you to say, not me, to go on.
Listen, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being here tonight. And
thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. So the list is there to use. You know, if I send around resources, you're allowed to ask how to use them or what they are, and the first one I send out will be the better quality recording of this class.
Could I ask a real quick question before we?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Did you say something about being able to get a Chiron ephemeris somewhere?
That's easy. We'll send that out to the list. There's quite a few different
ones. Okay, that's all I want.
Yep. And then if you want it on paper, the American Ephemeris lists Chiron. Good. All right. Listen, thank you all very much. Thanks for all the Planet Waves people for being here, Amanda and Amy and Victoria. And I'll catch you all next time.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Bye, everyone.
Thanks. Good night. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Good night.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye.